Hi, and welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
I'm Dr. Tim Pinot.
And I'm Taylor Brown. And today we are going to talk about the stigma that exists between physical injury and mental health. I guess I'll call it injury or mental health issues in sports. Specifically, we felt that we've observed when people talk about or when people experience physical injuries in sports, there's a much different tone and there's much different language and a much different mindset compared to when someone is experiencing mental health struggles in sports. Now, in recent years, a light has been shown on mental health issues in sports, and there's been a lot of great support shown for that and various, I want to say, projects and foundations and resources for athletes. And we've talked a lot about that on this podcast. But there still seems to be, at least in my research and just reading about sports and reading about athletes, a different way of speaking about it in a way that still kind of has a stigma. It's different. And we kind of want to just have a conversation about that and get to the bottom of, well, why is it different? And what are the sources of that difference, if there is in fact a difference? And maybe there's a different way for people to be thinking about these two things. And maybe they're not so different after all. So I just want to start with a question to both you guys of, how do you perceive that people, coaches, athletes, the media conceptualize or talk about or report on physical injury versus mental health issues in sports?
The first thing actually that comes to my mind is Simone Biles and her performance in this last Olympics, and just and this is really not necessarily how the media portrayed it, but the reaction from fans, I guess you'd say, just the public, like the kind of vitriol really that was directed her way, like statements of like, that she's a quitter, like this is what she's there to do, that you should, like that she was somehow letting her team down, letting her country down. And I think really rooted in this idea that a mental emotional quote unquote injury, right, is something you can just push through, that it's somehow a choice or even a failing on your part if you can't kind of rise above it or get past it. And I mean, and here she is, right, doing, I mean, at the top of her sport, right, doing some of the most dangerous moves a human being can do. And if she's got the twisties, right, if she cannot be aware of where her body is in space when she is turning in that way, like so fast and with so much power, with so much force, she could break her neck. I mean, so easily could get injured in a way that would be, we're not just talking about sprained ankle. I mean, right, that could be not just career ending, but life ending. And so she makes this, what to me seemed like an incredibly brave and responsible choice to be like, I don't want to put myself in life endangering risk. I need to step back. Even though I think some athletes would respond to that pressure and think, I just need to do it. Right, because it is not the same as a broken leg, or a fractured vertebrae or something like that, where you've got a doctor telling you, like, oh, no, you can't, you are not cleared, what else it kind of makes me think of, I used to teach this course, like this history of psychology course, and I like to take it way back, like all the way back to like philosophical thought and the way that our understanding of mental health and mental illness has like evolved over millennia, and the ways in which like some mental illnesses like depression were for a long time considered moral failings, You know, one of the seven deadly sins from Christianity is sloth, is depression, essentially. And like to think that, oh, if you get depressed, that is a sin. You are sin. Like, that is just like a wild notion. And it feels, I mean, it feels so relevant to this conversation that like we just hold the idea of some sort of mental or emotional limitation so differently than we do a physical limitation.
Yeah, I'd like to chime in on that because I think you hit on a lot of the things that I thought about when I was thinking about this conversation. The first of which is the way that when I said media in the introduction, I said that because actually before this talk, I went to recently Simone Biles is now coming back into gymnastics after 2 years off, right? And so I went to some of those articles that were just recently published in the last few months and few weeks in some cases, and the language that they use versus the language that would be used for a physical injury is very different. And that was kind of at the core of the question. And I think you actually identified it, which is an attribution of what actually caused the person to stop doing the sport. You know, so Simone, in the articles, it says she made the decision to pull out, using the words pull out or withdraw, or something that points the finger at her and says that, oh, she was the one who caused this. It's her, like, it's her responsibility. Versus if you look at injuries, right? Even last night in the Eagles Cowboys, right? Dallas Goedert, he broke his forearm, right? They don't say Dallas Goedert withdrew from the Eagles game because he broke his forearm, or he pulled out of the Eagles game because he broke his forearm. It's that he had to leave the game. He walked to the locker room and did not return. And people know that, like, oh, it's because he broke his forearm. Well, clearly that's not his fault, right? Like he made an incredible catch on the sideline, came down in his forearm, and it's heroic. And he walked off and he holding his arm and everyone's like, oh, that guy's so tough. And but if you have a mental health issue and you cannot go on, it is basically, it's like, oh, that person decided to not go on. And it's looked at completely different. And I think, Tim, you were saying about like, we hold it so differently and that kind of like a moral failing. I do think that because mental injuries are less quantifiable, like you can't take an x-ray and be like, oh, you have depression, right? I can see the depression on the x-ray, or like I can take an MRI and see that you have anxiety. Then it's because, and then also because it lives here. I think the perception is that one, this is a part of your character. This is a part of your personality that like you have ultimate control over. So like, oh, if you have depression, why can't you just like shake it off? Or if you have anxiety, like, hey, just like calm down. Don't be so nervous. It's not like if you're broken forearm, like, oh, just don't have such a broken forearm. You don't say that, right? Like it's a thing, right? And so I think because it's people can't see it and they can't quantify it, it's not as tangible. All of a sudden it's like, oh, it's just a problem with you. But no one ever says that about physical injuries. And so I feel like
mental. It's not entirely true in terms of if you get repeated physical injuries, you can start to develop a reputation as somebody who is injury prone, and that can be seen as a weakness. It takes a while to get there, and you certainly don't get that kind of latitude with illness or some kind of mental condition.
Yeah, and I agree with that. Like right now, there's a guy on our team. He continues to have a reoccurring rib injury. You know, he rehabs it, he comes back, he had the injury again, and it's because of there are some imbalances in his body that we just can't really figure out. And it's not like we're looking at him and going like, ah, like he's just he sucks, because like it's actually like, oh man, like that really sucks for him, because like he's working so hard to try to get back. And we don't look at it as like, this is his fault. We look at it as like, oh, there's something kind of like outside of his control. That's like, causing his body to react in this way. But if, you know, if there's somebody who's having, you know, and I'm saying, I'm not saying this on my team, but like if there's an athlete who's experiencing a mental health, I just feel like it's so much more, it's not like, like that sucks for them. Like I feel for them. It's just kind of like, well, why can't they just get over it? And I feel like that's the way the general public kind of feels about mental health. Therefore, it's like they in that regard too, Keith, like you cannot trust somebody's back if they continue to have back injuries. But I feel like with like mental health, it's you almost direct that trust at the person. You're not directing it at their body. You're directing it at their mind. And therefore it's like, it's them that you don't trust. It's not their back or something like that. But yeah.
Maybe we need to create a new cognitive bias that exists, right? Like we have things like the fundamental attribution bias where we assume when people make a mistake, you know, it's one thing versus when I make a mistake, it's something else, right? That, I mean, there's so much here. I think this is such a rich and interesting topic because it's so complicated and so nuanced. And, you know, there's everything from, like, Tim, you were saying, the moral history. And if we look at it from a historical perspective, how people have been treated, who are different psychologically. And Taylor, the tangibility piece, I think is huge. And I want to circle back to that in just one second. And like the blame piece that you're hitting on is so interesting, right? Then and the language in the media articles, the choice type language versus being forced out kind of language. And I think we even need to slice it in some ways, thinking about the perspective of like athletes and coaches versus fans. Like Tim, you alluded to fans earlier. You know, I think there's a dehumanizing aspect to injury that happens with athletes. You know, Tim, something you say on our podcast all the time is how the whole human point of view, right? A holistic way of looking at people, that they're not just wind up toys that you put out on a field, but that they're human beings. And I think, you know, even I mean, I'm an Eagles guy. You referenced the Dallas Goedert injury. You know, one of my first thoughts, which I think is kind of a natural thing, but maybe I should be embarrassed to acknowledge this, is, oh man, he's hurt again. Like he's been hurt a couple of times in the last few years, and he's a pretty important player for them. And my first thought wasn't empathy, like, man, that was a hustle play and he's a warrior. And now he's got a broken arm. My first thought was like, damn, they're going to be weaker now. And they're going to the crux of their schedule, right? Which, and I'm a sports psychologist. I'm a mindfulness expert, and yet I'll be honest, I'll be vulnerable here and say that's one of the first things that I led with, because I think that's part of the culture of sports. So I think there are aspects to physical injury as well that aren't great in how we look at it. But I think we are light years behind. Maybe we would all agree with that in terms of how we look at mental injury, so to speak. And I think there have been some positive signs in recent years. I think there's more awareness, and I know this has come up in some of our recent discussions, that maybe we've seen more awareness, but the responsiveness to it, or you know, eventually the ways we can deal with this are not where they could be, or not maybe hopefully where they will be in the future. I just want to mention this real quick. I said I wanted to circle back to the tangibility piece, because this, you know, I've been doing this for a little while now, and I always think of this one client that I had in a conversation like this, who actually was not an athlete, but he was a high level performer in a different field and had a very high pressure job. And he had so much anxiety and so much pressure to perform that he would hold every day. And I remember him sitting in my office with me one day and saying, you know, doc, I just wish every day when I'm driving home from work that a tree would fall in my car so that I could be in a body cast and get some rest. And I just remember thinking, like, wow, right? Like, this guy had anxiety, this guy had depression, this guy had a number of things that were legit mental health concerns that absolutely affect or interact with his life as a high level performer. And his wish more than anything else is that he could have that be worn on his sleeve, that he could have it be tangibly out there, so he would have a quote unquote excuse to get some rest. I mean, that to me has always been a very poignant example of this, like just wishing, and he's not the only person. I've literally had athletes wish for injury so that they could get a break or so that they could escape from their season for a time. So it's powerful stuff. And last thing, and then I'll turn it over to you guys. The other piece that we could probably do a whole separate episode on that I think this is incredibly relevant for, and maybe has gotten more media attention in the last handful of years, is the role of concussions in this. Mm-hmm. Which I realize is a whole separate debate, but you know, with everything that's come out about CTE and repeated head injuries, and obviously concussions are not something that you can see on an X-ray either so easily, right, Taylor? And how much easier it is or cleaner it is in some ways to break your forearm than it is to get a concussion and to know that you're not going to re-enter the game. Now, obviously, we've made some progress there too, but I still think concussions are treated differently than a broken leg or a broken rib. And obviously, concussion is a great example of an interface between physical and mental injury. But I think that's an incredibly relevant side topic to this conversation. So I just threw a lot out there, but curious.
Yeah, I just thought back to the Kevin Love thing, and you know, there's been a few of these more high profile athletes who have either had to take a period of time off, like you know, Kevin or Simone or Naomi, and you were talking about like the full body cast, and it's like, oh, if I'm in a full body cast, it legitimizes my what's happening to me essentially, and then it's like, and then I really actually can take some time off, versus if I have all these other things that aren't really seen. You know, there was this actually this organization called the Unseen Opponent, I think was the name of it. I'm not sure what's the status of that now, but and that brought me to like, I wonder if, you know, if there are kind of different levels of mental health struggle or mental health issue that come with less, almost less stigma because people see them as more legitimate. And so I'm thinking of, you know, when a mental health struggle impacts a person in such a way that it then doesn't seem like their fault anymore, or they can't be blamed for it. Kevin Love, for example, having a panic attack, and you can see the physical manifestation of what's happening in his mind. Or if somebody was having a manic episode, or you could see something, then I feel like the stigma would be less, because then it's like, oh, they're like, that person is really like, there's something really going on, versus something that maybe isn't actually impacting their playing that much, or isn't, you can't see the physical manifestation of it, you know, but they're really struggling on the inside. Yeah. And then they then choose to take a step away. I wonder if that would be seen as less legitimate, because people would perceive it as like, oh, it's not as serious, where actually like to them, it is, it is as serious as anything. You know, so I kind of just wondered in that way, and along that line of thinking, we have this, I was trying to look for a picture of it, and maybe I could share a link to it on the show notes, but our sports psychologist at Penn shares this, it's essentially like different levels of stress, and there it goes from like green to yellow to orange to red, and it's just a way to kind of educate the athletes on like, for them to understand what they're feeling, and like, when is the point when you reach out to somebody, and who is that somebody that you reach out to? And it's like green, it's, you know, this is kind of what most people would experience, is not very much stress, you know, and then there's yellow, it's like, okay, you might want to talk to, you know, a friend or a colleague, and like, and then it's like orange, that's when you, you know, that's when you reach out to the mental health professional, and red is like, this is a crisis situation. And so it kind of helps with the education piece, so that athletes aren't waiting until orange or red to try to, yeah, you know, reach out.
Yeah, you're getting, you know, back to that idea of choice, you know, or what appears like a choice, right? Like in the same way that like a broken arm, it's not a choice, you know, it's broken, right? And that idea of a panic attack or a manic episode where someone like actually loses touch with reality, like they lose control, right? It's very clear, like, ooh, that's not a that's not a choice. You know, so I think you're probably right around like there's this kind of physical manifestation of it. If there's something around the actual loss of control, like that's the only excuse, or it has to be so severe that your agency is literally taken away from you. That's the only acceptable time where you could pull back, right? And so in some ways, this, you know, it reminds me of the conversation that we were having in a recent episode is about kind of like, what's the impact of competition generally? And like, what beast are we feeding, you know? And Keith, I kind of loved what you shared and that vulnerable piece. Like, this is my first thought, you know, like, injured again, right? Like, and like, yeah, I think you're probably spot on about like, well, why was that thought? Because I'm embedded in this culture of sport and this culture of competition that despite all my mindfulness training, perhaps despite my best intentions and who I really am in my heart, right? Like I am influenced by this atmosphere, right? In the same way that I think when it comes to concussions, right? Like if it's not a visible injury, right? You've got the athlete maybe saying like, put me back in. Like, I'm fine. I'm just a little dizzy. Like, it'll be fine, right? Like, unless it's really like the, again, getting to that point of the excuse of like, I capital N need to stop. And it is very obvious and it is very clear and it is unquestionable, right? That is the only time it's not viewed as like a weakness. And I actually have a version of this conversation with a lot of my clients in my private practice. Again, not athletes, just human beings, right? Who are out there like seeing me because they need some additional support. And I said need, like maybe need, maybe just want, you know? And so like whenever we, you know, even between sessions, but if we're going to go on a little bit of a break, maybe there's a holiday or I'm going on vacation or they're going on vacation, you know, I will often encourage people like reach out, you know, if something comes up, send me an email, you know? And almost always the response is, I don't think I'll need to. And I'm like, yeah, you probably won't need to, but even if you just want to, like, why can't that be acceptable? Why do we have to wait until, like you're saying, I like that visual. Like, why do we have to wait till this red zone, right? Like, what if we actually allowed ourselves to lean on someone proactively? Like, what if we allowed ourselves to remove ourselves from a situation that was causing us harm before the harm got to this like insurmountable level? You know, Taylor, you had, this will be my last thing, but you had referenced like Naomi Osaka, you know, and like her decision to step back from play because she didn't want to do these interviews, you know? And it's like, if you send someone into a game and they have a broken arm, like, you know, like that's going to cause more harm. That's why we take them out, right? And she was saying like, this causes me harm. Having to do these interviews, being put under pressure like this, like it's not relevant to my performance as a tennis player. Like, and it's doing me harm. And before I get to the point where I'm having panic attacks every time I'm sitting in the press room, like I'm going to choose not to do this because I don't want to suffer that additional harm. I think she was like being this really phenomenal model about how we don't let it get to the capital N need state, you know, where you actually lose like a sense of control and still have some agency over taking care of yourself.
You just said something that a light bulb went off. There it is. just for our,
since we're an audio medium, Taylor literally turned a light bulb on and off.
There we go. It's almost like sport has been set up where only somebody else can tell you if you are okay to play. So in like when you have a physical injury, somebody else tells you, all right, it's time to come out. Or like it's very rare in sport, I think, in the history of sport, that if an athlete says, I need to come out, will that be taken as the truth, I guess, right? On either side, yeah, mental or physical, I would say.
Or even because they're injured or because they're saying they're good to go. Like, we don't trust it in any direction.
Right. I think there is a lack of trust there. It's like, oh, no, you don't come out until the coach tells you to come out, or you don't come out until the doctor says you can't play anymore. And Certainly not for mental health struggles. I mean, that's becoming more of a norm now, hopefully becoming more of a norm now where people have the autonomy to do that. But I think it also comes with a lot more trust in athletes themselves. And I wrote down here in my notes, what is toughness then versus now, and what is grit, right? Just to come back to the Eagles again, because we have two resident Eagles fans. And Tim, you can be an Eagles fan too. Jalen Hurts played through injury last night, Eagles quarterback. He has a knee injury that he was kind of hobbling around and going out on the field, and people are kind of praising that. I think a big fear about
Which actually got re-injured last night in the middle of the game, and he collapsed right before halftime and had to sort of gimp over to the sideline. And words were being thrown around like warrior, right? To your
Absolutely.
point.
Absolutely. And that happens all the time. I mean, I looked up when I read that online, I just looked up some other kind of topical things that are happening right now. There's a Clemson football player who's playing through injury. The coach says, football is a hard game. It takes a toll on you mentally and physically and emotionally. Not everybody's built the same. Some guys can push through things, and some guys, that's just not how they're wired. So it's like toughness and pushing through and grit is really something that is super valued in sports. I mean, it always has been. Toughness is like the number one thing in sports, and you'll see that time and time again. So I think there's a real fear with the rise in the acceptance of mental health issues as legitimate, that athletes are that we're essentially coaches are going to start trusting athletes, and then athletes are going to lose their toughness because every time they're anxious or feel a certain thing, that they're going to pull themselves out instead of being tough, right? So if I was a coach, right, I am a coach, but if you were talking to a coach, a sports psychologist, and the coach was worried about, like, well, if I just give all this trust to my athletes and say, okay, you decide when you come out, you decide when you can play, you decide these things, well, they're just gonna lose toughness. They're not gonna be gritty. And we know grittiness leads to success, according to Angela Duckworth, right? So, like,
Well,
what is that?
how do we though? Because I think this is a really worthwhile thing to explore around the edges, but also kind of recognizing how tied this is to these larger contexts that we were talking about before. Because part of this too, I think, is a lack of real understanding of what some of these mental health conditions are and what they mean, and a fear of acknowledging them, right? Taylor, you gave an example on a recent episode, like, an athlete saying to you, "You're not getting into my head," right? And that's not even someone who's necessarily having a mental health thing. That's just like a mental training thing, right? And so I think, you guys were saying before, like, if someone has a physical manifestation of a mental health thing, maybe that would be more acceptable. I can see that argument. I can see what you mean and why you're making that statement. I can also see the other way that if someone was having a full-on manic episode in a locker room, he would probably freak a lot of people out. And they wouldn't be like, "Oh, well, I guess this is something serious now. We better take this." They'd be like, "What the hell's wrong with this guy?" Right? Like that they would have, it would be scary. Right? It would be scary. They wouldn't understand. And I think that's a huge part of this too, right? Like, here would be somebody who, like Tim, as you said, maybe there's a loss of contact with reality. Maybe there's it's out of the person's control. But if we saw someone on the bench or someone on the sideline having a full-on panic episode, I don't think our first reaction would be the same way we would when they have a broken leg or a broken arm just because it's a physical manifestation. I think we wouldn't know what to do. Right. We wouldn't have a good explanation for it. And I think that's sad in a way. right? And it speaks to, again, the light years behind that we are in understanding mental manifestations as opposed to physical manifestations. And yet some of what you're saying too, Taylor, is this has sort of been part and parcel with sport, is that sports are physical. We're used to the physical. We understand that if you play football, you could break a bone. We understand that if you're going to compete, if you're going to be gritty, if you're going to push your body to its physical limits, there's going to be physical consequences of that. It's like we can wrap our brains around that. I think what we can't so easily wrap our brains around is that, you know, we're putting these people under concentrated, prolonged, intense pressure and stress, and that they being human too, eventually will start to show cracks from that. And we don't know what to make of that. We don't know how to understand that, that if some of those cracks emerge that are larger than others, just because it's a tangible manifestation, I don't think that's going to be more acceptable to the average fan or to the average coach. You know, maybe to us, it becomes easier to work with in a sense that, like, look, this is a real serious thing, as opposed to, I know the point you were making, like anxiety, depression, either subclinical or clinical, but not to that extent, might be harder to explain or harder to see. But man, the serious stuff, that's a whole nother thing in terms of our ability to deal with that in the world of sports.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're right, right? Like someone's having a manic episode in the middle of a locker room, it would freak everybody out. I think the similarity, or like what would be the same in the response was like, oh, that person can't play, right? Like that's what's the same about a physical injury and something that severe. It's like, oh yeah, you're not choosing to not play. We are taking you out, right? Like you can't play with that broken leg. You can't play while you're not in touch with reality. But I completely agree. Like no one's calling that person a warrior. You know, no one is lionizing that person for pushing themselves to the point where, right, there is this crack, right, so to speak, kind of in their mental, emotional armor in the same way that we do, you know, when someone plays through some sort of physical injury. But there's still that, like, when you get pushed to the point, when you push your body or your mind to the point where you lose control, you know, like, that is the kind of pressure we are putting athletes under, we are asking them to put themselves under. And right, while I think there's a understanding of the way of the physicality of that, like I think we are light years away from understanding kind of the mental emotional piece.
I think too, another angle here, another way to look at this, like one of the most common ways that this plays out is with burnout, right? And you know, I've had athletes come to me and you can see it kind of from multiple angles here and, you know, be experiencing very legitimate burnout, but people don't understand, parents don't understand, coaches don't understand, teammates don't understand. And so they kind of may come to the sports psychologist as a last, like, I don't know what to do at this point, right? Like I'm just totally stuck. I've also seen it the other way where someone is experiencing burnout and they go to a mental health provider and they get diagnosed with clinical depression. Mm-hmm. And it's not clinical depression, it's burnout, right? And so I think, I mean, there's just so much to this topic in terms of thinking about kind of that balance between, yes, recognizing very legitimate, very real mental health concerns that are a result of, or that are interact with or affect or impact in some way sport performance, but also not pathologizing things that we don't fully understand. Like we were just talking a moment ago about being under this prolonged period of stress for a long time. Someone who might be showing some symptoms of depression or might be showing some symptoms of anxiety, that does not mean they have big D depression. That does not mean that they have generalized anxiety disorder. That very well could be burnout, and how easy it is to miss the diagnosis that way too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, right. And just like that all this stuff exists, anxiety, depression, like exists on a kind of a continuum of natural human experience. Like perhaps the appropriate, the logical, the inevitable result of being under prolonged stress is symptoms of depression and symptoms of anxiety. But like in the same way that like continuing to just whether you're a gymnast or a football player or anyone who's in one of these high impact sports, like you're going to have joint issues. You're going to have bone density issues. You're going to
overuse issues, right? That's what we're talking about.
Yes,
basically.
Yes, exactly.
Mental overuse.
Totally. Totally. Like, how could you not have that experience at some point? Right. And we make space for that physically, but like not mentally and emotionally. Like, no, like that's what grit is, right? Grit is no such thing as an overuse injury when it comes to mental, emotional health. And maybe that's just not real.
So I'm so glad you said that, because I think I was kind of coming to that. I think you put a nice fine point on it. And how, like, you could make the arguments that the lifestyle, the expectations that we have for athletes, certainly as it becomes more and more a part of your identity and more a part of your lifestyle, it's almost inevitable that you're going to experience some of this, right? So many of the protective factors that exist from sports and exercise, they kind of get minimized when you're throwing in this level of competition, this level of pressure. And so you've got that just as sort of, you know, again, just like we would expect, like over the course of an NFL career, a player is going to get injured. There's like 100% chance that someone's going to get injured over the course of their career. We might also need to think of this, that at some point, if you play sports long enough at a competitive level, at some point, you're going to have some kind of mental health manifestation. And maybe even something more serious, like what we were talking about before. And right, I mean, just kind of wrapping our brains around this, around all the different sides, around how it can be missed and pathologized and underestimated. It's really, I have a lot of empathy for the sports world because it's hard. And I think people genuinely are trying in a lot of ways, certainly more so than they ever have at moments in history in the past, it seems like, at least from my understanding. But man, I mean, this is just something that it's going to take a long time, I think, for sports to catch up and figure out how to deal with.
And I think this perspective we're talking about is like, something just occurred to me, which is kind of really interesting. Like a lot of the stuff, if I've got a client that comes to me and they're exhibiting kind of, not an athlete, right? Like they're exhibiting kind of mild to moderate depression symptoms, I'm going to recommend like exercise. I'm going to recommend like get plugged into a community. You know, like some of these things that we know have like substantial, significant impacts, like positive impacts, right, on these kinds of symptoms. And like to look at it in the way that we're talking about it now, I think really reinforces the need for kind of the proactive approach, like before there's symptoms, you know, knowing like this is going to come, like this is the natural outcome of this kind of pressure. And you're also already building things in, especially if it's a team sport, like community and exercise, that are probably going to mask these symptoms for a really long time, even before they start to emerge, because you're doing a lot of the things that are already probably pretty helpful. And so we really need to make sure that things are in place, that you're getting the support that you need, in the same way that before athletes are injured, they still probably go to a PT, right? To like just work on mobility and work on flexibility. They might still go to a trainer and get ice baths after the game, even, you know, to prevent injury. Like, ooh, what could we do to prevent, you know, not just like make space for and treat, but to prevent this outcome that we're talking about?
Yeah, I have something to add there. You know, you guys have been using this word a lot, pressure, right? And I think In the way I'm understanding it, you're saying that when you add in pressure, there's a lot of pressure, like a lot of athletes feel, there's going to be a point where an athlete might manifest a mental health issue. And I can't help but think, is there a way to coach that helps alleviate some of that pressure? And does the pressure come from outcome-driven environments, results-driven environments? Like if we really have more of a process-driven environment, you know, a process-driven culture, where our self-worth is not connected to the outcomes as much, and it's more connected to mastery. You know, we talk about mastery. Would the feeling of pressure be similar, and would the mental health issues present as frequently.
I mean, I immediately think of the conversation that we had with your colleague, Wes Ng, just a few weeks ago, you know, and he told us this really just, I mean, kind of blew me away, this story about like his team, where I think this was, I think he was referring to the first time they made it to the NCAA championship. He said he had a conversation with them before leaving. It was like, you guys are enough. Like how we do in this race doesn't matter. Like if we come back having lost everything, like you are enough, you are already enough. And he talked about how scary it was to say that, right? For fear of like what you were saying before, Taylor, like, oh, if we really trust our athletes, like, but what if they don't then push through, you know, like what if they stop trying really hard? But I think the irony, right, the paradox is that like if we let go of the pressure and they can find their intrinsic motivation, they'll probably actually end up pushing harder than we could have ever pushed them. And like there, I think there is something to that. Like if you can at a team level, if a coach can create an atmosphere that reduces the pressure, I don't think it can ever be totally removed. Honestly, like I think sport is embedded in this culture of competition that is going to have an influence. And I mean, it's been internalized by every athlete before they even get to that particular coach that they're working with, you know? So I don't think you can be eliminated, but I do think, yeah, a coach with that kind of attitude probably can like remove some of that pressure.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing, that you can't eliminate it, but it's how you relate to it, right? There's a way of relating to pressure which can allow you to thrive. And I think that is so much of what we love about sports, playing sports, watching sports, studying sports, you know, the pressure, the opportunities, right, that we have while we're competing, the pushing ourselves, there's something so amazing and marvelous and incredible and magical about that. And I think that's why sports have achieved the pantheon that they have. And yet, I think this comes back, at least to me, something that has come up over and over and over again in our discussions. This need that people have both internally and, you know, asking the question, Taylor, about coaches, what they need, the feel the need to instill in their athletes is fear. We need the fear in order to reach our potential. And that's what needs to drive us. This sense of not good enough, this sense of not having what we're supposed to have, not being what we're supposed to be, and needing to work harder, tirelessly, without limits in order to get where we need to go. And what it's created, I think, is this feeling that a lot of athletes describe it to me this way, is that our successes are muted or feel like the status quo, and our failures are overwhelmingly painful. Because the success is almost what's supposed to happen, right? Because that's what the fear messaging teaches us, is that, I mean, Tim, you reference this all the time, right? It's like in our academic system, like you're supposed to start at 100 and it only goes down from there. So yes, I mean, I think there is, I don't think we'd want to take away all of the pressure. I think the pressure is a really awesome part of performance. But I think the way we regard pressure, both internally as athletes and also the way we treat other people, like even, you know, I could say I should be ashamed of myself for what I was saying about Dallas Goedert. Here's this person, right? This incredible athletic guy who my first thought is how his absence is going to hurt the team that I like or the city that I like, not, you know, concern for his well-being. You know, I mean, it's amazing. I will sort of close on this because I know we have to bring the conversation in. I always think of this passage from The Inner Game of Tennis from Timothy Galway, who, you know, he I'm going to paraphrase him a little bit, but talking about how sports are this totally unique phenomenon, how you can start off just being excited about it. It can be this escape. It can be, you know, this thing that we just do for fun that makes us feel so good. And then once we get competitive with it, it becomes like the greatest source of anxiety for us, right? It completely goes 180. It turns from like this amazing, powerful, feel good thing to something that can be our biggest source of stress in life. What else can do that but sports? So again, that's a paraphrase, but that idea has always really stuck with me in talking about things like this. Yeah. So any last reactions here real quick, as I know we need to end?
Oh, I feel like anything I would say, I would go on for like 10 minutes.
My last reaction is I think we have to redefine for the modern coach and the modern athlete what toughness is and what grit is, because the old definitions of it, I think, are leading us down a path that is not going to allow us to change. Because I think those are two huge values in sports, and if we keep the same definite archaic definitions of what that means, of pushing through injury, of pushing through mental and emotional issues, then I just think we're going to stay the same.
And I will say this, so this won't be 10 minutes. But like I completely agree, right? And I think in some ways it's what we're trying to do in talking about the mindfulness-based stuff, right? And like, words like acceptance and compassion are like immediately associated with softness, weakness, right? Because the whole fear-based model, right? Grit as we know it today is about control, right? But that old analogy, right? Like what's rigid is breakable, right? What's flexible, right, is actually much, much stronger, right? Like when we're really kind of introducing this to athletes, like we are talking about resiliency training. We're talking about a strength, but a very different kind of strength than they're used to, right? Being able to be compassionate with themselves and others, right? And to be accepting, right? It is not softness. Like it is a different source, a different kind of strength, a much more sustainable kind of strength. And I think, yeah, we have to break this association between those ideas and like this idea of weakness, right? We're really trying to paradigm shift away from this control-oriented, fear-based system.
Well, thank you guys. As always, I think it's such a thrill to debate and discuss these issues. I always learn so much talking to you guys, and I always feel like we could go on for longer. But alas, we have to wrap this conversation up. But certainly we want to invite you, our listeners, to be in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts on this topic. If you want to connect with our podcast, we do have a social media presence on Instagram. We're at mindful_sport_podcast. We also have a YouTube channel where you can check out the different exercises that our various guests over the last 5 years have led on our podcast. So great free meditation library there if you check out our Mindful Sport Performance Podcast YouTube channel. If you want to connect with our MSP Institute, that Tim and I are a part of, it's www.mindfulsportperformance.org. We also have a social media presence on Facebook and on Instagram. Also, you can connect with me, Dr. Keith Kaufman, on Instagram or on Twitter. My handle is at mindfulsportdoc. And as we do these roundtable discussions this season, we really do welcome you to chime in, and we love to hear people's thoughts on this stuff. We know there's not a right answer. And hopefully our ramblings here can add to the dialogue or start some dialogues and get people fired up on some of these topics. Certainly we would welcome you as well to rate and review our podcast, or our book is still out there, Mindful Sport Performance Enhancement, Mental Training for Athletes and Coaches, or I should say, and or. If you want to give us a rating or review for that as well, we're very grateful. And this season on our podcast, we do have a new feature where people can help support our podcast and allow us to keep offering this. And if you are so inclined, you can access that on our Buzzsprout page, and there'll be a link to that in our show notes. So thank you so much for considering that. And thank you to everyone who listened. And thank you, Taylor and Tim. And we'll see you guys next time.